two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
The Unrivaled Players Club with Scott Mitchell, Alex Carey, and Utah's Devin Kaufusi.
All right, folks, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled Players Club with Devin Kaufusi, brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bank. In the first segment, we were talking a lot about last week's game against Arizona State. Big win for the Utes in electric crowd at Rice-Eccles Stadium. And really the first time that it's been full capacity and with that end zone closed in. And I've just been fascinated with this because I already know it's a really loud place to play. And folks around the Pac-12 go, going to Utah, tough place to be, tough environment, blah, blah, blah. Was it different? Could you tell a difference in the stadium, the electricity of the crowd, and just the significance of this big game? Did it make a difference?
Oh yeah, and I've been waiting for a game like this, especially being an opposing team back when I was at BYU and playing in there.
Right,
I was like, oh, I can't wait to, you know, being up here at Utah. Yeah, now. I was like, I can't wait to be on the side, the good side of this crowd, and that was just so electric. It's just the crowd's into it the whole time, you know. Third down comes along, not even like at the snap. It's just like after soon the second down ends,
they know
everyone's already standing up, going crazy, and And we talk about that, and it's get the crowd in the game. Best way to get the crowd in the game is make a big play.
Yeah.
So I loved, you know, a game to remember for sure.
As Arizona State is now you guys are the only undefeated team in all the entire Pac-12, which is wild to think. The Pac-12 is wild.
It is.
I mean, it was another weekend of, okay, I guess, this team lost to this team, and you wouldn't have thought that. You know, I think that Stanford-Wazoo game was another one where we went, okay, I guess Wazoo's winning these games. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of these games, and you go, this thing is really up for grabs. And Oregon comes to you guys' place, in just over a month, and so, or in just about a month. And so I think about it and go, you guys really are in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. And there's that whole idea of, you know, when your offense scores and you're up by even a point, you go, well, if the defense holds, then that's it.
Yep.
Like, you're ahead right now of Oregon when it comes to all this. They might have the bigger ranking, but it's playing out exactly how you guys had talked about already about trying to win the Pac-12.
Yeah. Yeah. And even with the two losses, Coach Raven said, even as crazy as it seems, with two losses, it's still out in front of us. And just being able to roll through the Pac-12 so far and, you know, continue on. We played, a third of the Pac-12? So that's what we just talked about. I was like, hey, we still got a lot of football to play.
Tons.
It's all Pac-12 on the here on out.
I mean, but that being said, Scott and I still noticed a handful of these bowl predictors that have Utah here and there in the Rose Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
No pressure. No pressure for you. I know you don't think about it ever.
No.
But football in a season and in a game has momentum swings, right?
It does.
And early on in the season, the momentum was not in your favor.
No.
And so how do you manage that? Like, how do you kind of focus on switching the momentum? And I really, initially for me, it's like, how do you do it in a game? And then how do you do it over a season?
That's a good question. All I could think about is even today, for example, in our defensive tackle room, we were looking over, you know, us playing against stretch plays, and we're just going through old games already from this season. And it's crazy how different we look as a defense. And really, it's just stacking those positives and those wins on top of each other. So momentum swings. That's why it's momentum. It just keeps rolling, and you got to keep doing things that keep it rolling. So from game time to game time, like I said, first half, we didn't have that momentum, but we were able to get back to ourselves and really play the best half of football we've played all season so far. So really just stacking those little wins all throughout practice, through, you know, whatever period we're on in practice, because that will tell the story on game day. So that's what I always think about, and what they always talk about is, you know, Saturday's win isn't going to do anything for us coming this Saturday. So, you know, today was Tuesday. Tuesday's practice tells the story of what's going to happen on Saturday. So we just keep plugging along to it.
So what, like let me just, for example, early in the game, right?
Yep.
So ASU goes right down the field and scores a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
What happens on the sideline? Like, do you guys, because you go over and you talk, and what do you talk about? What goes on?
We come back, we're able to see, you know, some plays that, you know, someone missed a gap or an assignment. We see that, you know, someone didn't get the call, didn't run the right, you know, stunt or play. So we definitely address, you know, things that, you know, that we're shooting ourselves in the foot with. And it's just all solvable, which what I love about football is, as big as the problem is, the answer is always within the 11 guys on the field as well. And so just being able to understand that and make those adjustments. And so that's what we did second half. It was the whole first half, it was them running the ball and then taking shots. And so it's just like, you stop the run, they become, you know, really easy to read. And then we're able to play, you know, defense, we're able to recognize the formations and anticipate the play calls from them. And that's what we did. And on a defensive standpoint, and, you know, shut them out.
If you're looking at this, Devin Cavusi, by the way, our guest is always on the Players Club here on KSL's Unrivaled. You know, we were talking about this a little bit beforehand, and Scott and I have talked about it since Saturday. This idea of just, like, you know, this team had, I mean, we just, to have all these things go on to pile on to one another in terms of the tragedy of Aaron Lowe's death, Ty Jordan's the year before, and to have all those things happen. ESPN Game Day ran the big special, you know, that morning. Mm-hmm. And we were watching it in my house, and you couldn't help but watch the entire thing and just go, yeah, these guys were in Dallas on Monday. Last Monday, you guys were there in Dallas at the memorial for Aaron Lowe. And then you had the 22 seconds of silence before the game that was an absolute silent stadium mm-hmm. in a place that can be so raucous. Mm-hmm. And then between the third and fourth quarters, a stoppage also during that media timeout to be able to watch a dedication up on the screen as well. What are you guys thinking during all this? Because the fans are, I mean, there were openly weeping fans in the crowd.
Yeah.
How are you guys reacting to it? I could not help but think, boy, ASU's in for it here, because that's an advantage to have a team get fired up to see something like that.
Yeah. What we feel, especially me, when, you know, we're able to have that awesome moment between the, after the third quarter, right before the fourth, is, you know, they play the tribute. And at that point, you're thinking, life's bigger than football. It's really about the brotherhood we have here. So I think the whole team just understands, hey, it's us, and we got to lean on each other. And not just lean on each other, we all just kind of support each other, embrace each other. And, it's, you know, we're able to show that in the fourth quarter as well. And, I mean, it's just so special. So special. Just having the fans there, I mean, all of us having those emotions again. But really just the emotion of, you know, this is a family, this is a brotherhood, there's life. You know, a lot bigger than football, but it's a big part of
it. It's the right way to do it, because you think, too, like, I mean, we were talking about how ASU is lined up, and they're watching the same tribute on the big screen. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that they have to, I mean, they have to put themselves in that spot, too. And it's just, for a minute, everybody kind of stops and goes, all right, this is the important part, you know, for us to focus on.
But sometimes when these tragedies happen, mm-hmm. they're over-sensationalized, or they're almost like, cheaply,
almost like marketed or something.
Yeah, and diminishing the feeling of them. And this just has an authentic feeling to it.
Yeah.
It feels genuine, not only from you guys and from the university, but also from other people. And I, you know, I've had a lot of people comment about how touching all of this is. And I have to believe that it just has an impact, you mm-hmm. know, and I think how you said it was, you know, well said, that, you know, it kind of puts things in perspective and, mm-hmm. and kind of, you know, look, football's been a great part of my life and I love it, but, you know, there are a lot of other things that are far, far more important.
Mm-hmm.
Is ASU becoming a rivalry?
Since I got to Utah, that's been the rivalry. That's
really?
It's been the set rivalry. I got there and they're like, ASU's got a rival. They get ASU chippy. They play dirty.
Oh, and they did.
Yeah. They left. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah.
3/4 of the team right to the locker room there.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
That was wild. I thought the same thing. I mean, they ran too.
Yeah. Like, they were gone.
So why do you think that is? You know, because you can't just make up rivalries, right?
Yeah.
Because they try to make you guys in Colorado, and you guys actually like each other. I mean, there's no, I mean, like what is it that is it? I mean, why are they so mad, and why is it so chippy?
I'm not sure. I can only think of, you know, by the time Utah's played them in the past, there's always been something, you know, you know, to be won or to be lost, and it just so happens to, you know, swing that way for a team that wins. You know, they end up winning more. Off that win, then the team that loses a lot. And so I think that just adds a lot to the rivalry.
You know, it doesn't help when the shortest guy on the field stands over you and flexes. And if you're Britton Covey, we're going to talk
history.
About it. We saw history made on history. Saturday night. We're going to talk about it. He said he apologized to the team. I was like, okay, we'll talk about it next. Britton Covey's unsportsmanlike conduct that was absolutely necessary in my mind. We absolutely needed that. This team needed it. We'll take the break. More to go right here. It's KSL's Unrivaled. It's the Players Club right here on KSL News Radio. Stay with us.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.